space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life, a new civilization, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome to Retrek. I'm Captain Jim. With me, of course, Sir Admiral Elliot and Dr. Squee.
Let's do this drone!
And this week, now that Discovery has finished, is in the record books, is completed, we're going to be looking back, talking about each season, and giving our overall feelings on the first new Star Trek series we had in a long, long time. So, one last time, let's fly.
Let's fly, man. I tell you, I we're going to talk about it all, and there's some good stuff in Discovery. I'm not one of the haters. Some stuff I really love, but man, I've just finished today, literally mere hours before we recorded, watching up to the end of series 4, because we've just watched series 5 as it's happened live. And my God, I'm ready to not be watching Discovery, I've got to say. It's been arduous. It's been a couple of months, and I must admit, I took breaks. And near the end, I was like, oh my God, I haven't got enough time to take any breaks. This is just my life now as Discovery. And it just doesn't stand up to that much of a rewatch. I'm sorry, it doesn't. Like, it had some good moments, but fucking hell, I realized how many duds you've got on the way.
I've said it many a time. If we didn't talk about this podcast, talk about Star Trek during season 4, is the first time I was contemplating I would stop watching Star Trek.
But fortunately, you didn't. And
I can honestly, hand on heart, say I can never see me doing a rewatch of season 4. Some of the other episodes, fair enough, but season 4 was just painful.
The only thing I will throw out is rewatching series 4, because I was so reluctant to watch it. I was so thinking how shit it was going to be. In comparison to that, it was okay in places.
Yeah,
that's the compliment I'm going to give it.
Well, we're kind of spoiling a little bit what we're going to do. So we're going to go through each season and we're going to rank them in order of greatness. So
I wonder how season 4 is going to fare. I think it's going
to
be
massive surprises as to what might be taking the bottom spot. But you know, bear with us. There might be some twists and turns that you never see coming.
I actually put in a couple of series of Enterprise before series 4 of Discovery.
Well, yeah.
In a ranking of all the series of Discovery.
Season 3. Oh, of all the seasons of Star Trek. Oh, we should do a ranking of them. Anyway, that's for another day. Let's do Discovery, see how this goes. So, season 1. Now, I remember the first ever bit of footage that was released, and it wasn't even footage, it was just sort of proof of concept, and it was a really early model of what Discovery was going to look like based on the motion picture concept sketches. And it had it sort of coming out of a space dock that was built into an asteroid.
Very much shared from what they were doing in Star Trek Phase 2.
Yeah, exactly. And that initial teaser was very much based around that. And it still gave me goosebumps back then. It was like, new Star Trek. Okay, the ship looks a bit weird, but I'm excited. I just want to see it.
Because that was probably a good year, if not longer.
Yes. Yeah, it was.
A long time before, when we first got there, it was happening, and it was like, yes, Star Trek. And what I watched that loads and loads at the time.
And it was all over. There were so many little reveals along the way as well, because we got the uniforms, which a lot of people were contemplating. It's like, well, will they be the main uniforms or will they just be something like at the start? Because sort of there'd been some talk about there being some sort of time jump somewhere. And it turned out to be the main ones. I must admit, I was kind of skeptical about those, but grew to love them.
They look like an evolution of the Enterprise.
They look like a natural evolution, which makes sense. They've tried to do something that makes sense in the timelines. So you can't knock that. That was one of the things that they did well of natural evolutions in season one. We know that they had other problems when they sort of evolved.
We do, and well, we'll get to them.
But... I was going to get to my next picture that I saw. It was before, the fucking Klingons on, having lunch. Like that. That
yeah, the Klingons was, having lunch. The
fucking hell. You could already predict you're going to have some kind of negative response from changing Klingons so much. And they think the best picture to do it with was one with them at the canteen at lunch. That's the
leaked. It wasn't an official publicity shot.
No, they're jacking their teeth and everything. They didn't.
Because they tried to sort of downplay it. Like, you've seen it out of context without the lighting. You know, they're going to look better on screen. Spoiler, they did not.
They didn't. Like, the thing was that... That was early enough in the concept that they could have gone back and changed the Klingons.
They could have done. They could have gone, this isn't working.
Yeah, we're getting massive, massive negative vibes left, right, and center. No one is happy about this. It's causing a lot of problems. Let's bite the bullet, and we're going to have to reshoot these scenes.
Yeah,
I've got to say, I was so deep in denial as well. I was like one of the people going, like, no, no, this is a picture of them in the canteen. The lighting's probably bad. They haven't put the hairpiece on yet, obviously. I mean, like, clearly, no twat is going to make the Klingons look this shit. No one would do it.
Oh, they did.
Never going to happen. It was just the color, God.
How long have Klingons been purple? But anyway, what I want to talk about before we get into sort of particulars of the season is this season had a really... unusual structure, because people, it was split in two. They had a mid-season break, but it's actually really a four-part show. We get a prologue, which is effectively the first two episodes, then really what's sort of act one of the story, from Michael joining Discovery up until them making that jump and ending up marooned somewhere, and that took us into the season break. Then we get a four episode arc in the Mirror Universe, and then they come back and there's been a little bit of a time jump forward, and we get the resolution of the Klingon War arc, which is two episodes. So it was a really interesting layout, and I think parts of it were more successful than others. Like, if we put the Klingons aside, the look of the Klingons, which I know is difficult, I thought the opening two episodes, functionally a pilot, were pretty strong. They did a good job of introducing Michael, introducing Saru, which were, as it turned out, the only characters we needed to know at this point.
Spoilers, these are the only characters we were ever going to know.
And I'd like to sort of like jump in a bit on the arc just before you go into sort of like breakdown. It was very bold, as you say, to do that, no pun intended, but kind of the first two episodes are basically a prequel almost to the series we're going to see, which was insanely brave of them. Like, I've got to give them props for the bravery of that first series. Then you've got a Klingon War, which you start up, which you then leave partway through to go to the Mirror Universe when we barely got to know these characters. And I must admit, the characters they did flesh out, they fleshed out enough that when we saw their mirror counterparts, it did still hit. But that was very risky to do. And then you jump back to the end of the Klingon plot, which you started near the beginning. Like, it is so wild, the choices they made. And I will give them that kind of as high praise that they managed to pull off, like you say, kind of four shows in one for the first series.
I agree. Like, yeah,
I really enjoyed Klingons aside, look at the Klingons aside. Yeah. I really enjoyed season one.
I think generally it is pretty strong. And like you say, we're not even going to show you the titular ship until episode three. You know, that's just so strange. And the idea of the focal character is going to be initially a first officer, and then she gets busted down even further. And your captain is effectively a guest character. Yeah, and they have a bit of fun with that in the first few seasons. But Jason Isaacs, I thought, was great as Lorca. And I know some people guessed what twist was going to come up with him, but it kept me guessing right up until the reveal, and he got to go full villain for it.
I mean,
which...
I thought it was a great twist that they did with Lorca.
Yeah.
And when they reveal the twist, it all made sense.
Yeah.
The little bits and pieces you'd seen of him, and then you could sort of think, oh, that makes sense why he's got that in his quarters. And
yeah, because the problem, like the thing I was so worried about, and they totally got me, like, you know, like just listen back to our kind of breakdown of it. They totally got me. I was so worried because there are so many TV shows when they kind of have a new iteration, they want to strike out, do something different, and they kind of sell out the kind of like ethical world of, like, you know, I know mm-hmm. we've had Deep Space Nine, which kind of challenged that, but it's sort of like that was, it wasn't purely Federation. It was kind of like, how does Federation exist in time war? Ask those questions. And I think still kept at core what was kind of Star Trek, really, even though they kind of went against it at times. Whereas this show was like, fucking hell, what the fuck is Lorca doing? What the, he's a Star Trek captain and he's got like skulls in his like living room. He's got Gorn.
Yeah.
They shouldn't know about the Gorn yet. Like, or, you know, they shouldn't have them in their kind of quarters because of the way it worked, the structure of that episode, the previous. It was so much. I was going, fuck it. No, please don't have. I'm like, I'm kind of enjoying it as TV on its own right. But to begin with, I was one of the people saying it's like,
yeah, it's, it was.
It doesn't feel totally like Star Trek.
It was tricky. It was much more militaristic even than DS9 had got. And having Lorca as the figurehead of that made it land even more. And it was like you were wrestling with your inner Trekkie going, I want to like this, but what are they doing with it?
And the difference then, was, because you had Sisko, who, sorry to jump in, mate. You just made me think, because Sisko, who was always fighting with the morals of kind of what he was choosing to, Pale Moonlight is a study in a guy, how far do you go for kind of the ends justifying the means? Whereas, like, Lorca was like, no, just shoot the shit out of that guy. No, it's fine. It's okay. Just let him die. Yeah. Oh, mud. We'll just kind of barbecue it. And, like, you know, he just didn't care. And that was the bit which was really jarring, which it had to be for their reveal. So, again, just...
And then when the other shoe dropped, you got this great moment where Saru effectively became the captain and got the crew and started doing the speeches and everything, and we're a Starfleet crew, and it delivered all of that through the character of Saru, which had an inadvertent potentially effect of making us think, well, I'd like this to be the Saru show, maybe not the Michael show. And, you know, that's something I think I remember when we covered season 3, that was something we all felt. We loved Saru as the captain. Yeah. And Michael felt, we'll talk about that season 3. But my issue with season 1, and I thought there were some great episodes along the way, like the time travel, time loop episode was great. Yeah, go on.
Can I just on the rank thing, because it's like you said about when they brought in Saru as the sort of de facto captain, and then later on you have Anson Mount. I know we're going to get to season 2, but it's like I felt like that was kind of like a, kind of smart as well, because for the first time they're asking us to follow an individual, not the captain of the ship, and not necessarily the crew all the time. And where you played about with rank and you got her demoted and him promoted, and then this guy's gone, then new guy's in, it kind of almost forced you to kind of be following Michael because of that. So I thought for what they wanted to achieve, that was actually quite a
you're right.
Like I'll go back to like look at Michael in this season 1. When she's antagonistic and she knows she's done wrong and she's a rule breaker. And she was so much more, such a better character in the early seasons than what they did to her when they made her all emotion constantly and cry constantly. You would not have seen that in season 1, Michael.
Yeah.
I think that's fair. Yeah, when they softened her edges.
I'd actually say it's same. When Michelle Paradise came in as like the showrunner,
full time showrunner, yeah,
I think it changed it.
I think a slow roll would have been so much more satisfying as well. Like, have her kind of fight with her emotional side versus her Vulcan side, because they always want to pull on that card when it suited them. Like, as we get into the later series, even like they was pulling on that card to like go, she will be a bitch between Navarre and the Federation. We'll get into that, but it's like, they used it when it suited them, but they very clearly forgot it when it didn't.
Yes, I mean, I don't even think a Vulcan roots were even mentioned in the most recent season, which, to say how heavily they leaned on that, like the connection with Sarek and everything, Spock in season two. But before we leave season one then, we've talked about the Lorca twist. Now, the other twist was the Vok-Ash twist.
Oh, I've got another twist after that.
And I think to an extent unfairly maligned, because we live in the internet age and because we have internet sleuths. I think they tried. They set up a fake IMDb for this actor that was allegedly playing Vok.
Yeah.
And I think it was just because it took so many episodes to get there.
I think it also
steamrolled. Everybody had found it out and worked it out.
I think that's also a problem that it had with its scheduling or how we saw the episodes. Because bear in mind, this show started in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 2024 now when it's finished a run of five seasons.
It actually makes it. I read this the other day. The longest running in terms of time Star Trek show ever.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, which is part of the problem. And, like, I may be wrong, but I think season five is the only season that's not had a mid-season break of any sort.
Two didn't.
Didn't it?
No, two didn't. Right. But yeah, the others.
But
it
was like
did.
The mid-season break, and then there was a long gap between seasons. There'd be over a year between seasons. So it's no wonder people found out what was going on.
Yeah.
You can't keep things like that secret in this day and age.
No, this is true.
But to your point, I mean, totally hats off to the guy playing Ash, whose name's escaped me.
Shazad Latif.
He was brilliant, and I thought the two characters were very just like, if it wasn't for the internet sleuths,
it's not an easy thing to keep a lid on when you're trying to pull something like that off. And I think they did everything they could in this era to do it.
And the way they went heavy on the fact they were going, like, previously when you've had someone who's like, well, we had it in Trials and Tribulations, where they had the guy who'd like had the makeup job, which they've done like loads of times in Star Trek. It's like, he was a Klingon. No, he's a human. What, you cut off half his bone structure from his face? Like, that's got to be torture. Here they're going, no, I was out and out tortured. Like, he's remembering it as if he was a Starfleet officer.
Yeah, and which was that so was an edge that Discovery lost as it went on. Like, there's some really dark imagery and themes. Yes. Yeah.
You saw the bone cutter.
Yeah. And all the stuff about him being tortured and PTSD and, you know, trigger warnings, but the rape is alluded to in there. You know, it really went dark.
I needed some counseling after seeing Klingon boobs. I think that was season two.
Yeah.
I know I'm jumping ahead, but it's
no, like, that was season one.
That was season one. I was like,
yeah.
Who was crying out for that? Who was saying, I need to see boobs in... Okay, there was a lot of geeks, but it wasn't us three, I promise. And then, if you find a letter with our signatures on, it has been forged, I tell you. There was another reveal you haven't mentioned.
Go on. No, you go, yeah.
Just before you go, sorry, I didn't want you to jump on season two without discussing, like, it was in this season, but a few episodes in, I think, when we discovered that Michael is Spock's sister, adopted, and you get the whole Sarek set. Again, I'm not going to go into too much. I'm sure we will get into season two at some point, but it's like, I really didn't like the portrayal of Vulcans. I thought it was too, like, they did the pissy Vulcan thing as opposed to just being emotionless. And being pissy at stuff isn't the same as being emotionless.
Yeah, they took the Enterprise sort of semi-antagonistic Vulcans and really ran with it.
And let's face it, DS9 did that. It's the original series, and I thought Next Gen did a really good job with the Vulcans. But yeah, I mean, yeah, I just want to see one really true portrayal. And funnily enough, actually, I thought later on when you had someone who's from Navarre, who's kind of like not got to be emotional all the time, she probably did a better job. But
she's good. I thought the biggest thing that let down season one was them final two episodes, because I thought the Mirror Universe arc was incredibly strong. And then they came back and the Klingon War seemed to go out with more of a whimper than a bang, yeah, really.
I think that's a series structure mistake that they made, that a season has to be the story arc. And they've done so much in season one, they got to, oh shit, we've only got two episodes left. How do we wrap up the Klingon War?
It was a bit of a damp squib. We'll plant a bomb on Kronos and threaten to blow it up if anybody. Yeah, it was just a bit.
Well, if you monkey about with the order of things, you could have had that at the end of the first half.
You could have done
somehow propelling them into the alternate universe, or you know, or you still have the Lorca ship play out because he's playing it for his own ends, and they just managed to stop the bomb before he can set it off or something. You know, put him in the heart of it. And then that be the reason why we end up in the Mirror Universe.
But it did finish with that absolutely brilliant final sequence where they pick up the distress signal from the Enterprise.
And how many times did everyone look at that screenshot in the year between seasons?
Yeah, I watched that closing 2 minutes. I don't know how many times. Yeah. And I remember just almost just like shaking with excitement as the numbers started to come through as NCC 17, and you go,
The thing I liked, like, I was looking at it and it was obviously not our original series Enterprise.
No.
But it had been done faithfully as a modernization of our series Enterprise, as opposed to like the Discovery's design is based on Brian Fuller saying, I want square nacelles, and someone should have gone, no, Starfleet nacelles are round. Shut the fuck up.
Yes, I agree. And also they should have said that about the Klingons. But
it's simple design choices that Discovery, it's grown on me how it looks as a ship, but it's always been...
Mm-hmm.
I think it's so similar to an early concept drawing from, was it Matt Jeffries did?
Either Matt Jeffries or Ralph McQuarrie, I can't remember.
It's one of them. It's a very early concept drawing it's based on.
Yeah.
And there's a reason it's a very early concept drawing.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they developed it better.
I mean, the only thing I would say is it kind of fits the whole thing that they've gone for, that... the Discovery gets to be an anomaly. It gets to, like, it was a prototype ship. It never got repeated. In fact, any mention of it got deleted. So kind of the fact that it looks a bit different and they never continue that design sort of works towards that idea of, like, we can't even have something which looks fucking like this. And by the way, well, we're getting some memory, like, no one mentioning it in a bit. I'm sorry, I was almost going there. But, yeah, we're just on the reveal as well of the NCC 1701. I also like the fact, and I love the fact, like, please continue doing this. It makes kind of no sense, but I love the fact they had the static, which used to get on old TVs, which don't get on TVs anymore, let alone space station. But there's something I still love about the static clearing to reveal the Enterprise. It was just so lovely.
Yeah, it was just... and the fact that it finished with the original series theme tune, it felt like it paid off the fans waiting for those moments at the end of the season.
I'll also throw in that Discovery, I think sometimes better than others, it kind of, it's not shy of using the original series theme tune when
it's not.
The maker, which I, the only thing I do think is, like, much was my complaint of the last series of Picard, and my only complaint about it pretty much was the fact that they kind of reused music as opposed to having their own musical identity to that series. That series was so strong. I'd love to have something which was unique, a bit more unique.
Yeah.
They just, it seemed to save money. Cut and pasted.
I mean, they did have the Picard theme tune for season one, and then it was completely unmemorable. So maybe that's why they fell back on the.
You can lean on nostalgia to the point where you're not getting anything new. Ken, just one more. Also, the credits. I just want to say how much they suck. Just one more time.
They do.
And this was the first time we saw them was in this series, and I thought they were shit from the very beginning. I'm like, why the fuck am I not seeing a spaceship swoop past the screen? The fact that Strange New Worlds, they've managed to do that and make it look more modern as well. Like you say, something faithful to the original, but they've done something new. And
it's just, been respect.
Who fucking gives a shit about a sketchpad?
We're 6 years on from the original series, so we know things are going to look different. but they've been respectful of how the original series.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And that leads us nicely into season two. But before we do, we have to do the ranking. So far, I would say out of the seasons we've talked about this episode, season one is definitely at the top of the list. For now,
although to your argument, there's about four seasons in that one season, but we'll say it's one season. Yeah. So far, it's at my top.
So far, season one is at the top for anyone keeping track at home. So into season two, then, and basically, Anson Mount struts onto the bridge, makes
and we all
the perfect
fall in love.
Hit. Yeah, everyone falls in love with him. He may as well have "Give Me My Own Series" written on his forehead.
Oh, if they didn't have this in their mind that this might be a pilot, like backed up, I think they knew. I think there was at least a thought in their head when they put on Anson.
How can we do a remake of the original series and get away with it?
But the plans at the time were for the first spin-off to be Section 31, focusing on Giorgio and Tyler. And that just got shunted to one side when they saw how popular Anson Mount was.
Oh, my God.
And he was great, and he really brought a new energy to it after Lorca. It was, we've got evil Captain Lorca, and now we're going to give you
Starfleet.
The paragon of Starfleet. And even make
a point of it, don't, because the Admiral even goes, the reason we kept you out there was you're the best of us.
Yeah.
So there'd be something to read, the best could rebuild us.
And two things which spring to my mind. One is, it was like, when I was watching back season two, and you know this was basically became a long pilot for Strange New Worlds. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that they then kill off all the members of Section 31 apart from Giorgio. It's like, no, you're not getting a new series. We're just going to prove the point you're not getting a new series because you're all dead. That's why, because you're all
dead. Yeah, they really did.
They're just going to really rub it in your faces that you're not getting your own when they had Pike first on the bridge and they wanted to prove that he was a man of the people, which I thought was very effective. They had him, everyone sound off, tell me about yourself, like, said their name and their rank basically and what their job is, which again it's like, even then when they give a moment which is perfect for Anson Mount to show that he cares about the people, they still don't let them really talk about themselves. It's still this is my name.
But it did appear like things were going to change, like the second episode of the season was New Eden and that focused on Awashikun.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, we're actually going to get to know these characters now.
Yeah, we're going to go on missions with them.
But we didn't.
I've got to put out an apology as well. Not at all to the writers. They don't deserve it. But to the actors who are playing those bridge crew, who are given so little, so infrequently, when they did get a scene where they got something written in, I've got to hand it to all. Like, I mean, it's really, I never said any other, but I sort of like, its absence maybe was kind of damning for them. Whereas it bears saying that they really, like, there was this one scene where you got Reese, who kind of like had this pit on the on like a planet, and he talked about like how he was saved when he was a kid by Starfleet officers. He was a refugee himself, so he gets to be that for
right.
them. And you're so buoyed up, and he's done such a good job. And again, fair play to him. And then you don't see the mission at all. He goes on and says, "Oh man, that is not your fault at all, though." I just really want to highlight, just as a general point, that they were really good.
The actors when they did get a chance to be on screen, never dialed it in. They were just badly misused.
Yeah, it's a shame.
And a few times they got given some actual horseshit when it was written, but every time they knocked it out of the park.
Yeah.
And I think, like, the highs of season two went so much higher even than the Mirror Universe storyline. Like, we got, I think, the fourth episode where they introduced the Sphere. Noble for Charon was a really good classic Star Trek, communicating with something unknown, finding a peaceful solution. And then we got that episode, If Memory Serves, where it had a previously on Star Trek and it used clips from The Cage and took us right back. It was wonderful.
I just want to chuck in there that, these episodes felt very purposeful. Like, after we've had this series start off in a place of war, even though we have had like they've had some good sort of nods to Star Trek, this like, right, we want to remind you what kind of like classic Star Trek is, and it fits perfectly into Strange New Worlds.
Yeah,
having that mission, having the one where you go into the past, having one where you go into a civilization which is basically a planet which lives in a village for some reason, having an episode where you have like callbacks to classics, and as you say, like as we get onto If Memory Serves. Again, really lovely, but I still think it's batshit that they kind of showed the original clips. And to Elliot's point before, as opposed to getting something which was true to the foreheads of the original ones, they completely redesigned them.
Whereas the design choice was very odd, but as an episode of TV, I thought that was really well. Excellent.
And having the time crystals and having, like, when they brought Spike back, did you for one second thought they were going to have him throughout this show, throughout his own spin-off, living with the fact that he's going to die with his face melting?
That was it. Like, if you weren't convinced Pike needed his own show, the episode Through the Valley of Shadows, where we get to see him come face to face with his future self, just, again, really stunning TV, and you couldn't have made a better case for we want a Pike show.
We needed a Pike show. And we've got our Pike show, and it belongs in our lives.
Exactly. the finale, the two-part Such Sweet Sorrow, was just spectacular. Like, the battle that they did. Okay, we've never heard of them using drones before in Star Trek, but in terms of what they achieved on a TV budget and how it looked, the battle against Section 31, it was just stunning. So the season went out on a really high, I thought.
I mean, I would like to just throw in, because like we are being very positive, as we should be, about the Pike and the Enterprise of it all. Mm-hmm. All great. I did feel like the Red Angel and some of the Spock stuff, if I'm frank, let it down. Like, not present Spock, but when they had him as a child and just like suddenly, which has never been mentioned, it doesn't fit his character at all. Like, as someone who's dyslexic, I am so pleased for Star Trek to be talking about that, but like, it just doesn't fit Spock whatsoever.
No,
such a weird pull.
No, there was problems with what they did with Spock.
There was, and there a was, lot of that.
There was a problem that. Does this really start here, where Michael's the centre of the universe with being the Red Angel?
The Red, when it circles round to her being the Red Angel, it felt a bit forced. And I think if season two has a weakness, it is that in between the two Pike-centric episodes, we get two or three episodes where the Red Angel plot just nudges forward, and we spend a lot of time going back and forth, like, it's Michael's mum, oh, but now it's Michael, and we spend a lot of time with a mum just trapped in the suit. Like, I think that's nearly a whole episode with them trying to work out what's going on, and it maybe it's an argument for the shorter seasons that we'd get later, but the season really lulls when it focuses on what is effectively the main story. And it also set a precedent that Discovery would revisit time and again, which was, we'll have this central mystery, but it'll be in multiple parts, and you'll have to visit multiple worlds to get multiple clues.
Yes.
And we do that again in season four, and we do it again in season five.
And we do it in season three.
Season three, I think, to an extent, not quite as much,
but we still do it in season three.
Yeah,
I mean, I'd even throw in, but it's an answer to your question, Elliot, I think that the rot had already a little bit set in the first series, because straight away you've got Burnham, who, like, first of all, she tries to hijack the ship in a very 24 Bauer, Jack Bauer kind of way, but then, because she fires on the Klingon, which, like, you have no, like, there was nothing else she could have done in that situation.
No.
They're going to credit her as starting the whole war, which seemed very, like, it seemed to be making
very false.
Yeah. So, like, to your point, I think this is just further kind of doing of that. I think right on the first series.
Yeah. It was sort of like, what was she meant to do in that situation? Not fire on the Klingon when they're being fired on and the captain's being killed and they're firing on their ship. she had no choice but to fire.
Yeah. Yeah, it's ridiculous. But yeah, and I just think this series, the second series, would have been so much stronger without... You could have just removed the Red Angel. Just have Pike coming aboard the ship because after Lorca, they want to make sure, like, you know, they want their best captain to make sure this crew's okay after everything they went through, Mirror Universe, saving them from the Klingon War. They want to make sure they've got the best look after them. Number one's capable of looking after your ship. Have a year over there. Just have it be that. Like, there's no reason... The Red Angel didn't do anything for
no me. And the weirdest thing about the Red Angel is that the season literally begins with Pike saying these seven red signals went off, and then they sort of have to wait for them to come on again. It's like, well, didn't you know where the seven were the fit? And we never see that happen. It's a very weird introduction that they sort of basically say these seven signals are going to turn up at some point. And it's all, well, how do you know this? And why do you know this?
I think there's a common complaint with Discovery. It throws out so much stuff. It kind of forgets what it's put out there and doesn't.
Yeah. Later. I mean, you can head kind of and go, right, well, when Michael went back at the end of the season and set off the seven things, she must have also done the original seven that put them on the course to begin with. But like we've said before, when it gets to the stage that you're having a headcanon stuff, something's gone wrong with the information they've conveyed to the audience. But again, the season finishes with the original series theme tune because it basically finishes with a sizzle reel for what's going to be Strange New Worlds. Discovery blasts off to the future, leaving us on the Enterprise with a newly shaven Spock and a promise of, don't worry, you'll get that show.
And two things about that. One is, I really kind of wish they'd been brave enough, at least for one series, like they didn't spend very long with Spock looking like that. He went for the classic look there. And then when they went in Strange New Worlds, he kind of like, his hair was a bit waving, a bit cool. And like, they didn't want to make him look that dorky. It's like, oh, come on. Like, that's classic Spock. But okay.
Maybe we'll get there. We've got a few seasons left, hopefully, of Strange New Worlds.
When Discovery goes to the future, it seems very far-fetched that the whole crew went just so Michael wouldn't be lonely. Everyone giving up their lives in their time.
And the families and everything.
That's...
Yeah, a little bit. But that's how we got there. It felt almost like a mea culpa to some extent. Like, this hasn't worked as a prequel. You'll get a proper prequel. We're going to jump into the future and try again, okay? Everyone happy with that? Let's give it a go. And then we do go to season three. So before we do that, season two, better or worse than season one?
Better.
Oh,
I'd agree.
I'm going to put season one higher. It's very close between those as far as I'm concerned, but I found the lack of Red Angel. Anson Mount was brilliant. He was brilliant. He had all the Red Angel bullshit. I'm not marking this down based on Anson Mount. He raises...
No, I'm saying that goes to top Anson Mount.
No, which is fair, but just make it clear. Anson Mount is certainly not a reason it's getting marked down for me. Just
so we've got Red Angel stuff. 2-1, sorry, Squee. We're going season two goes just pips season one.
That is.
Season three, then we jump to the future. And incidentally, this is when we started covering season three, was the point that Dr. Squee returned full time to the podcast and we started doing the live internet broadcasts. So,
and between season two and season three give us our first massive sort of retrek story arc out of
we did the temporal cold war.
Well, we did as much time travel as we could find.
We did.
I think we covered pretty much every episode of time travel in trash.
Guys, come on,
we had a good go at it. About it,
but that was the reason I wasn't on for several episodes. I got lost in a wormhole. I kind of popped up here and there, much like the Red Angel, and then I came back for good.
Exactly.
900 years old. That's why I look so haggard.
There's a bit of a full circle for us as a podcast. Season three.
I want to throw some stuff in about season three.
Go for it. Give us your thoughts on season three.
One of the reasons I started coming back and end up never leaving again was because, like, this happened during lockdown. And I feel like we all needed something hopeful. And the timing of this, like, this show was like written and pretty much finished before lockdown, but it was effective getting out, which took a while. And then it got, I think they delayed it a bit. But anyway, by the time it came out, just the story of having in 900 years in the future, and the first time we've in a very long time had a new time frame in Star Trek.
Future time frame.
One which, well, yeah, because like the other ones have existed between other time frames. So that time frame's been discussed, mentioned, whatever else. This hasn't even been mentioned. We haven't seen any tech from this period. Nothing. Zero zilch. It's, we're starting. We can start with a whole new canvas, which is such a brave thing to do. But that kind of story of rebuilding the Enterprise, just rebuilding the Federation, to begin with, actually made me really sad, because when they go, it's like, yeah, we're 900 years in the future, the Federation's gone. I'm like, oh, fuck, I wasn't feeling depressed enough. But then the genius of that kind of was revealed. Again, they didn't plan this. It's just the way it turns out that we then got to see the Federation rebuilt over that year as we're feeling really out of it, really despondent. That gave me so much fucking hope. So, like, you know, again, even though this part of it wasn't necessarily intended, this is why this series will always mean so much to me on a rewatch, because it just takes me back to that time and the hope it gave me.
And I think it did, again, give the show a bit of a new lease of life. Like, it wasn't relying on a guest captain this season. We made Saru the captain, and he did a great job throughout. And we did introduce this new time period and new characters. It brought us Admiral Silver Daddy Bear. The ship itself got a makeover, and I think that was for the better. Like, they didn't totally revamp the design, but I think the changes they made to it did make it look more aesthetically pleasing than it was to begin with. And we got introduced to a lot of new concepts. Like, we see that Earth isn't part of the Federation. We see that the Vulcans have become part, joined with the Romulans and become Navarre.
Which made sense that they've had unification.
Yeah.
And it worked so well with what had been laid down before. Again, like, I think this was one of the better moments when Discovery looked at what happened in the past. And kind of very naturally and organically kind of continued on that storyline.
Yeah, absolutely. And Book, I know we have been somewhat critical of the way the Michael and Book relationship played out in season five. Yeah. But when Book first came in, I thought he was great. He added like a roguish element to it. And I think the chemistry between Sonequa Martin Green and David, and they have got great on-screen chemistry together. They were very believable as a couple. Yes, they overplayed the hand with the, hey, guess what we did in that mystery year.
Oh, the amount of times they mention missions they've gone on, which we will never see or hear anything from, like, apart from these, like, vague, like, oh, we should have done a Shanghai Five. Like, what the fuck? I don't care. I wasn't there. Like, you're not going to show me any flashbacks.
You're not showing me it. You're just talking word salad.
Because it would have been great if they had some flashbacks to that period.
And it's, like, what they were doing there, what the continue to do there with Michael and Book, when they keep coming out with let's do this scenario that we've never seen, is worse than when they do the techno babble, because at least when they're doing the techno babble, there's a gadget there in front of them and they're doing some sort of scan and there's something there relatable. It doesn't make a lot of sense what you're saying, the words, but at least I can see something. You're just coming out with random words, not describing exactly why it was, and we've never seen it. There's nothing relatable. It is literally just word salad.
Come on, you haven't heard of a Kardashian Ridge Rider? Come on, we do that all the time. No, you're right. It's just bullshit. And she kept on also going on about the fact that she'd been gone for 2 years. Like, there was an episode where she didn't mention that she'd been gone for 2 years, and she said it as if she'd been gone 20. It's like, well, I was gone for 2 years. A lot can happen in 2 years, and even 2 years in a rough time period. I get that. But it's like, and like the first time she sees Tilly again, Tilly talks about, it's like, well, I pictured this as a kind of like flower and you blew it and the petals went and you let go of us. Like, when did you think about this, Tilly? In the last 5 minutes?
Tilly, that was
where it was stupid, because you got people reacting to us if they haven't seen it for 2 years and no.
Yeah.
They've gone straight through and found it.
They've only seen it like a couple of days, if that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's other things days as well. One thing I noticed watching them back as well is like when they go to Navarre, the reason why they're allowed to go there is because Burnham's Spock's sister, which Spock just episodes ago has told us that they will never speak her name. They will never confess that she exists. Yeah. By the way, obviously erasing the memories of everyone who's ever fucking met anyone from the Discovery, but that's fine. No, they've erased everyone's memory, but 900 years in the future, they've kind of worked out she exists again, but not the Discovery, which they're not allowed to tell anyone the Discovery's from the past.
Yeah, that never quite... Yeah, they never again, it's a trait of Discovery over and over, is that they didn't always deal with these things to a satisfactory way. Yeah. We did get a cool two-parter late season where we went back to the Mirror Universe and we went back in time with Giorgio.
Yes.
And this was clearly designed as a setup for the Section 31 show, but Michelle Yeoh had to go and win an Oscar and...
Selfish bit.
They had to focus on Strange New Worlds. So we never quite got it. But in terms of, like, we talked about making some big swings, bringing back the Guardian of Forever was... It worked. They got away with it.
Yeah.
Kyle was great, the guy playing him.
As sacred cows go in the Star Trek universe, the City on the Edge of Forever is pretty much on a pedestal of its own. And risking playing with that and pulling it off, yeah, well played to them.
And made the donut exactly how it looked in the, like, original, yeah, like the frame.
Yeah, they made it look right. In it,
but yeah, it's good. Yeah, and I thought it was a wonderful two-parter. Like, we really got to see what it was like for her in the Mirror Universe, which we'd not really got into before. We just had Michael there trying to survive it at the time on, you know, the crew. Yeah, I thought this was great. It just it supplied so much context for her and for her journey. I felt her journey was nice and organic. I loved the fact that she was so prickly and annoying to people right up until the end.
Yeah.
Although then suddenly when they're eulogizing her, they're always like, well, she taught me something. It's like, what did she teach you? She was
one of the nice evil dictators from the evil universe.
Yeah, it was so fucking weird. I get it. Burnham had that relationship, which was special to them because they had counterparts in their universes.
Yeah.
Related to one another. Suru should have fucking hated her.
Yeah.
She was eating... his Mirror Universe brethren.
Yeah, she literally ate your brothers in another universe.
No, she literally ate the Mirror Universe version of Saru.
No, she did. He didn't. He survived.
Right. Okay.
Well, we find out later he survived, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it finishes with basically a three-parter that wraps up the burn and everything and restores to an extent the Federation. We get some good action. We get the incredibly silly turbo lift shaft that's bigger than the known universe.
Oh, for fuck's sake, yeah. That's
that was straight out of Star Trek V.
Yes, but even more so.
Let me just check.
Again, pretty strong ending to the season, I thought.
Just a couple of things we haven't had... like we haven't picked up on there is like the, you've got the Toll and the Grey thing, which, by the way, Toll, we will very rarely from here on forward hear about her Trill kind of like past life experiences, like
Dachshund. Yeah, one every episode.
Don't get much of that. We get Saru gets an adopted son. I look forward to seeing him in the next two series. That's going to be great. We'll talk about that in a minute, though. Obviously,
yeah,
lots of stuff with him.
Yeah, good old Sukal.
Like, they even have a mention of him in the last series. There's like, or like penultimate last one of those. And he's going, it's like, oh yeah, penultimate one. And he goes like, yeah, my adoptive ward is very worried about this. Move on.
He's on Sukal. I think he's on a planet with Narek from season one of Picard, the planet of never to be seen again.
Oh, God, they should so do that in Lower Decks, the planet of the gun. Please say that's one word.
Yeah, that'd be good. And one thing that stands out this season as pretty naff is the flip-flopping they do with Michael. that they take it to the extent where I don't even want to be in Starfleet anymore. I have no idea what my place is.
I don't think being the captain was ever me. It's the word.
And yeah, and then by the end of the season, she's the captain. And I think what we said at the time was we were happy that she ended up as the captain. That's obviously where they were going. But the arc they chose to do immediately building up to it just didn't feel like it played into it at all. It was very strange.
You have missed possibly one of the greatest characters in Star Trek ever that we get to meet in season 3.
No, we mentioned this.
And I can't remember his name, but it's the lieutenant the Starbase with the parrot alarm clock.
Yeah. Parrot alarm clock guy. Nick,
have you ever seen a kind of better example of Starfleet than someone who waits decades? Like, he wasn't even the guy who was commissioned. It was his dad who was commissioned. He basically just went, no, I just believe in this shit. I will wait here until someone can commission me.
You just wait here. I'm not going to cheat.
You know, no one gives a shit if I hang up the flag, but I'm not going to do it until I have done that by the book. He is like, kind of the anti-Burnham for that. It's like, he will follow, like, the rules by the letter.
Yeah.
And it was the Don. And yeah, you did get him in the last episode as well. And oh, by the way, and the other thing.
And we still want a parrot alarm clock if anyone has a parrot hologram alarm clock.
And that guy. I just want that guy to come on the show. I don't want any other person. Just that guy to come on.
Just that guy.
And we also have to just to give him a shout out because you're saying about Burnham taking the captaincy. Even then, she goes like, what kind of a world to think about? It's like, no, you fucking can't. Just fucking get on with it. Like, we just spent the whole series of you saying how you don't want to do it. If you've decided you do want to do it, just fucking take this.
But the season finishes
with
her saying the thing.
The thing.
Let's fly.
And after they've had a year of, for some reason, Discovery wearing...
Oh, you're not putting it up.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
No, I was expecting the picture.
Oh, are you?
Sorry. Hang on.
You've ruined the moment, James.
Let's fly.
And I just love the fact that they've spent the whole year when they've said it's like no one can know about Discovery coming from the past because there's the temporal cords and everything. We've got David Cronenberg just to explain it to us. They go through all of that and then, like, throughout the whole series, they just wear uniforms, which to everyone else would be fucking a bit weird. They're wearing uniforms from 900 years old. What the fuck? Like, is this a retro thing? Are we all going to wear this?
Well, we got new uniforms, didn't we, at the end of season 3.
Yeah.
And it went through a redesign before the start of season 4.
Thankfully.
Yeah, I think that was
the grey ones were not great.
No.
I thought red ones were great.
Season 3, then. Where do we put it?
I'm going to put it third.
Oh, third.
Yeah. Oh. Because I do really like season 1. Season 2 still is the top.
So 2-1-3 for Elliot. Squee, where are you putting season 3?
3-1-2. I'm going 3-1-2. 3 is my favourite series of Discovery.
So you want 3 at the top. You want 3 at the bottom. So I kind of get a casting vote here. I think my compromise would be... I don't know whether to put it above or below season 1.
Yeah, season 1's better because I really enjoyed you getting your trek.
Then you're giving it bias to just being like the first series. Like, that was just a feeling you had around it. That wasn't earned by the series necessarily. I would argue. I would say this was so hopeful and such a cohesive as one series compared to the other two.
I'm going to put it 2-3-1, but that's no knock on season 1.
I could agree with 2-3-1.
I'm going to go with that for now.
I can agree with 2-3-1.
So
I will accept as the official rankings of the Retrek podcast. 3 will always be my favourite personally, though, just because of everything I've said. It really was... one of the standout kind of TV lockdown for me.
Season 4, then.
Right.
Now, before we start...
Right, shall we start with ranking it?
I'm done. Bad.
Before we start, I just want to say that I think it was the mid-season break that killed it. because I think up until the mid-season break, it was doing okay. It wasn't amazing, but we had the Choose to Live episode where it sort of referenced the, you know, the whole warrior nuns and everything. We had Neva rejoining the Federation. We had, I'm looking through the list now and I'm trying to convince myself. Tilly helping the students with the crash shuttle and everything.
That wasn't a bad episode.
No, that was a great remake of the Galileo 7. That was great. I enjoyed it.
Yes, it was.
And you've gotten, you had the wonderful thing in that first half of the series where Zora was suddenly able to make decisions on her own and no one was bothered by it. No one bothered to report it. They were fine with it. That was great. That was really good.
And so I thought the story arc was kind of doing okay up until that point. Not the greatest, but not the worst either. But then we hit the mid-season.
Well, can I ask you something about the first season? Because I want you guys weigh in, because I've just sat through this bilge. Did you think the introduction, the DMA, which is basically from the first or second episode, but anyway, did it just kind of like, it just seemed to kind of just suddenly be there? I don't know. It didn't feel very satisfying the way they introduced it.
Oh, it was just a random anomaly that appeared out of nowhere. And then destroyed
Book's homeworld. It did do that.
Yeah.
Book's grief as well was very inconsistent in my...
It was. And also, it, like I was saying, Book was this character who was full of energy and knew the thing, and giving him this level of grief made him a bit dull.
If you're going to give him that level of grief, given the passion of that grief, given that anger, they just had him doing this stuff, but it was very level about doing all this stuff, which was going against the Federation, going against Michael, who's in love with, like, he was turning his back on all this stuff, and just the level of rage to do that.
It didn't. And then they came back from the mid-season break and went, let's do an episode where they play poker and Owo does some boxing. And it just lost me at that point. I was just like, nah.
I mean, Washington doing the boxing was probably one of my...
It was nice to have some more of her character, but
yeah,
story.
That's probably one of the episodes I objected to the least. Funny enough,
I just thought it was dull. I think maybe because we had such a big break and we came back to that.
It was dull, but when you look at the conclusion of season four from the mid-season break, that is actually a highlight episode.
Possibly so, yeah. And it also undid the idea of Books betrayed Michael and then they were flirty the next episode when they were playing poker. It's like, no, this is serious. Anyway.
Can we go for the Zora episode? Sorry, was that where you were going?
Yeah, no, go for the Zora episode, yeah.
Fucking batshit. Like, this angers, like, this is the episode of Discovery, possibly which angers me the most for the kind of like feelings over any kind of fact or reality. It's a whole thing of like, well, would you expect if this was a human crew member, or like a like physical bodied crew member, because it's not all humans, obviously. Would you expect them to kind of like, well, no, you wouldn't expect them to have fucking arbitrary control over the ship. Like, why is no one like, just why is Stamets on his own in saying, it's like, no, this is fucking batshit. And when he does the turn at the end where he goes like, yeah, but if she joins Starfleet, it's like, yeah, but what other Starfleet officer has the power to unilaterally go, no, I'm stopping the mission now. It is insane. When Zora actually offers them the failsafe so that they can decommission her, I thought, well, actually, that's the most sensible thing they've said so far. It's a bit cool, but it would make more sense to me if like they had a way of kind of like of overriding
her,
which anyone should have, because like, again, you don't have Data, like, okay, Data did manage to take control of the ship, but by design he wasn't designed to do that.
No, exactly. I quite liked what they were trying to do, the idea of it's a lie. You know, they were trying to do their own measure of the man, but didn't.
Yeah, they were trying to do it. It's that experimenting with what is sentient and what does class as a life form. Because we did it with Data, we did it with the Doctor in Voyager.
Yeah,
Where is the extent of human life? Is what I mean.
Yeah. But it's like where it becomes one of the main season characters, and Zara is going to be a main season character. Possibly she won't be a main season character, even though the ship's alive.
I mean, sometimes she is, sometimes she isn't, as they decide. And then, she doesn't get
it. As has become customary, Discovery does its basically three-part finale.
Oh.
But in this instance, we've got a whole episode going through the galactic barrier.
Right, I'm just offering
that.
And
they find a planet, and we get a whole episode down on the planet. Then they need to talk to the species, and we get a whole episode talking to the species.
Where in that episode they very, very pointedly say several times, it's going to take ages to crack this language. Like, we've just got the basic rudimentaries of it. It's going to take a while. Then what's in the next episode, Jim?
Then they've just got like a little iPad and they can say whatever they like.
I mean, the one thing which surely they don't need is for Saru to type in the quiz. Like, surely they've got voice control.
Don't be silly.
They could crack this language is made to take years to crack because it's so different to ours, but then they need a speaking spell to make it work. It's just, it's ridiculous.
Oh, I missed an episode. There was a whole episode where they get ready to talk to the species. Then there's a whole episode where they talk to the species. Sorry, I did it a disservice there. There were four episodes of what could have been done in half an hour.
It was painful.
It
was painful when we watched it. It's painful. I have done my best. I've had therapy. It's cost a lot of money. I've had therapy to forget these 4 hours of my life.
Well, I'm sorry. I had to watch them, so you're fucking going to remember. But it's there's also, you had Colbert's first existential crisis of many in this series, and it's Krodinchek. It's Cronenberg's character.
Kovic.
Or
Daniels.
Well, that's the thing I was going to say, because Kovic speaks to, he's in a hurry to go to a meeting, and he gives Hugh 5 minutes to talk about his woes. And he tells him about him because he's had all this experience with different life form, whatever. And he says in that conversation, he goes like, it'll change you. Like, why did you survive? Why, when you were dead, did you then get brought back? And he talks about all this stuff. And it's like, when... watching that after the Daniels reveal was my only enjoyable moment pretty much in series 4. I was like, man, that takes on a completely different... I genuinely, so watching that scene back, I'm wondering if they did have that somewhere in the moment.
Maybe so.
I bet they didn't.
Well, there's nowhere else in the series it's ever...
I honestly think there was absolutely no planning for season 4. I think they were trying to prove the fact that you could put an infinite amount of chimpanzees and hand them a pen and get a script.
Yeah, only just. But
that scene is worth watching again. Like, don't watch the rest of the series. Just find that scene and watch it again.
We all agreed season 4 goes at the bottom then?
Again, it's almost in a different list. It's that far at the bottom.
Yeah.
And we also get the President of Earth at the end is Congresswoman Abrams, I think.
Yeah, that wasn't bad.
Earth rejoining
the Federation was nice.
I just wish, the only thing
it was
just
an awful
was,
season to watch. It was boring.
It was
slow. It dragged. It was painful.
And I kind of wish they'd, at the end of that series, given me what I wanted and just had, like, as part of the Earth, we joined the Federation, went back to Earth. I would like Earth to be the base. Tell me you wouldn't have had goosebumps as they flew back over on a shuttlecraft over San Francisco.
That would have been much better.
I've got a theory that season 4 is why it was cancelled while they were making season 5.
It's possible.
And that's probably why it got a sudden cancellation, because they had such negative feedback from that one season.
And a shorter season order. But then that had become standard by that point, though it was 10.
Time-wise, wasn't that after, like, quite a while after season four when we got that announcement. I thought,
yeah, it was.
But it'll, like, you've got to have board meetings and all sorts, haven't you, that go on with something like that. Because they've already got season five ordered, but you haven't seen the reaction. And then you start thinking, well, this is costing so much. And everyone's in the world and other planets have said how shit what we've just put out for season four was.
I don't know. I mean, just for my money, if you'd already filmed season five, I think the temptation for me would have been to
show a few
episodes to see how that was received before you made the announcement. But you could be right. I
don't know. We may never know, but we're agreed season four goes at the bottom. So we won't recap season five. We've just covered it over the last 10 weeks. Yes. Where do we put season five then? So at the moment, we're going 2, 3, 1, 4. Where does five go in there?
I mean, you see,
season five was much better than season four.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think that's
where it is. Recovery. And I honestly think that we put season five above season four, but below season one. So it go. So we've got to do a final order of 2, 3, 1, 4. 2, 3, 1, 5, 4.
Yeah, within the retrack system. That's
2, 3, 1, 5. I find myself in agreement, I think. But
I think enjoyed is possibly the wrong word. I think season three was a stronger season than season five. But for same reasons, I think season one was stronger than season five, and season two still says it.
That's the thing.
I mean, my feeling is the first three series, we're sort of broadly in agreement. It's just which order exactly you put them in, but we like the first three series.
It massively lost its way with season four, and season five recovered.
Season five recovered quite a bit.
I mean, I must say, like, season five, just very quickly, because I know we're not going to go into film, season five, I must admit, I was thinking, it's like, am I going to bother watching it? I didn't feel the pull to watch it, which is not a good sign. But I was even thinking, it's like, are there any episodes I could pick out? Are there any episodes which are really that stand out that I want to watch them in isolation? And it's such an interwoven plot arc. There are some parts of plot I like. I mean, I'd like a supercut of all Reyna and Admiral Silver Daddy Bear.
Yeah.
Only Admiral Silver Daddy Bear.
Reyna was a massive highlight for season five, bringing Reyna in.
Absolutely.
Massive down was that every mission had to be Michael and Buck.
Yeah.
For one reason or another, you had to shoehorn, Buck had to go on the mission.
Yeah.
And that just, and we've established this is an amazing crew, supposedly, even though we haven't seen them acting as an amazing crew on away missions a lot, but it's, we're meant to think this is this amazing crew that doesn't get used because this random vagabond is better than you all.
I would argue, though, it's not that we don't see them on away mission. We actually see them being really fucking good at their jobs, but nothing else. We never see them in a downbeat moment. We never see them playing the piano. We never see them playing poker or anything. We never see anything of them. Like,
true.
And the one thing we do learn, like, which Jim pointed out a few episodes ago, is we get that the Asian dude whose name's escaped me. It's not Bryce. It's Reese. We find out he's really into ships. So they get a hold of a Constitution class ship from the other universe and they send the others off with it. It's just genius. You can make it up, but they really didn't try very hard.
I think in a lot of ways it was a good final season because it got all the things Discovery gets right, and it got all the things Discovery gets wrong.
It was true.
it was the whole show in microcosm, really. Yeah. But
and thank God we got another crack at Hook and Burnham not being able to decide if they want to be a couple. I was worried we'd go a series without that.
Yeah.
Oh, no, we went there. We didn't go an episode without that.
Even the existential Betazoid stuff. I mean, it's like, fuck's sake, do we have to make that about them as well?
Yes, we do.
But, I think we've covered what we're thinking about
every
episode. As a whole, what do we all think? Was the show a hit or a miss as a whole?
Overall, I would have to still say a hit, because when it was good, it was very good. It's not my favourite Star Trek. The things that it got wrong, it got a bit too wrong for me. It was an interesting experiment in doing something different that didn't pull it off all the time.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it brought Star Trek back and it led to everything else we've got. So it did its job. I'll always thank it for that. I don't need to see any more of it.
Yeah,
I'm very much the same. I mean, yeah, I think it's... It did some stuff well, but like... I mean, it got to the point where I was thinking this week, literally, it's like, would I... Because I joked about Enterprise before, it's like, would I put this above Enterprise? Probably it had more consistent arcs, because this was about arcs, but there's episodes of Enterprise I'd quite happily watch over quite a lot of Discovery.
We talked about this not long since, and we were very sort of like that, which one goes above which with Enterprise and Discovery. And I think now it's finished and we can review the whole thing compared to the whole of Enterprise. I think Discovery does pip Enterprise, because I think Discovery did some things really well.
But I'd say it nudges it.
But my issue with Discovery is it's very hard for me to go back and watch an episode of Discovery because there's such long story arcs. There's a couple of them I could probably do, but there's not a lot that jump out of me that, I'll go back and watch that. I want to see that episode again. There's the season two one, you know what I'm like for names, but there's one where Pike takes a lot of sun down to the planet.
There's a few.
I'd like to watch again. I can't think of any from season five that you could watch on the York.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's like they got so kind of into... I know from the very beginning it was an on-running plot, but there was episodes from the first three series. Third series maybe not as much, but certainly the first two you could pick episodes out, and I would rewatch. Rewatch the Mud episodes, as insane as Mud's suddenly gone psychopath is. That's a very... Like, it's not Mud, but it's great. It's very enjoyable. Rainn Wilson's
it's
great.
It's a fun episode to watch, and you can watch that one on its own.
What tended to happen was the first half for the season had a few standalones, and then it went full on arc plot in the second half, but season five not so much.
I think that's my kind of like argument why, like, I suppose they each pit themselves at other bits, but it's like, I could picture myself with more episodes of Enterprise I can just put on and just watch and enjoy, whereas there's whole seasons of like season four of Discovery I probably won't be in a hurry to watch again. Season five, I don't know if I'm in a hurry to watch again. Season five, though, which was all right.
I can't see me watching it season four ever again.
I mean, I've been watching season five, but only for Rainer, really.
Listeners, Brendan, agrees it's completely unrewatchable.
It's very difficult to think of. There's some highlights in the show, but is the episodes that you could go back and watch? Because you often get it, don't we? You come in and you go, or you're there and you're putting about, and I want to put some on for TV. Oh, I've had a bit of Star Trek. I've got an hour spare. I'll bang an episode on. But I can't think of an episode of Discovery that jumps out of me. And I go, I fancy watching that. Yet every other. I could do that. Much Picard. Picard might be difficult as well in places, but...
But, like, there's... Yeah, okay, season one of Picard, I probably wouldn't rush back to. I'm going to rewatch all of it because I haven't rewatched that at all. But, I mean, I don't think there's any... Like, there's no series of Enterprise where I wouldn't watch at least some episodes from.
Yeah.
It's like, this is in a unique position of, like, having one season I definitely wouldn't... Another season I'd only really be watching for Rainer, as I say, because...
Overall,
I think that's the biggest problem Discovery's got, that visually it was stunning, It was crap at showing spaceships, though, even though it was visually stunning, which is really weird to say it like that.
That's the thing. I don't like the aesthetic of Discovery, even though I appreciate it for being a great technical achievement. But the look of it just wasn't for me. It didn't feel like Star Trek. Strange New Worlds does.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll wrap up there then. So a mixed bag overall, Discovery. No surprises there. We will be back. We haven't decided exactly what we're going to do yet. So we have a couple of weeks.
We've got 2 weeks before...
Before Prodigy drops.
Prodigy. So,
which is all dropping at once, which we didn't get
to
say. After we praised them, they went until we were fucking done to announce it. We thought you were playing nice. We should have known
better. Absolutely not.
I think how we're going to do it is we will review 2 episodes a week.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And we know there's 20 episodes, so we'll have a 10-week rule of Prodigy.
Yeah, that feels about right.
We've got 2 weeks before Prodigy starts, because our first show, Prodigy, will be on the 3rd of July.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, might we have a summer break before we go into that week?
Maybe. We'll keep an eye on the socials and we'll let you know what the plan is. So, speaking of the socials, you can find us at RetrekPod. You can email us, retrekpod@gmail.com. You can follow us on all the socials, including Retrek Model Studios on YouTube.
Where I've fallen in love with Gundam, and I'm not sure if the light will show this, but I've learned how to do candy coating. So I'm doing this amazing paint job on Gundam.
Excellent.
There will be another video coming out probably this weekend. And on the side, when I can, this does now go on my head.
Nice.
There we go. So the Planet Killer's coming along as well.
Can I just check?
With its tail on.
Gundam, is that animation? Anime?
Gundam's anime, but you can build robots from it.
There you go.
And Dr. Squee, what's going on with the Dr. Squee show?
Well, as we've been doing, we're taking a break from the interviews to bring you Doctor Who. And this week I spoke to Jack Taylor from the High Council of Geeks, where we spoke about the latest episode, Rogue. So, check that out. It's up there now. And we'll have another episode.
Doctor Who will be going into its 2-part finale as well. So
that's not showing our local air.
No, it's not. But anyway, we'll let you know what the plans are going forward, but we'll definitely be back for Prodigy. And for the last time.
Oh, you haven't got it written up.
Let's fly.
Let's dragonfly.
Fascinating.